So actually, what I told you yesterday was that as a government, we are keen on transforming our country from a fragile state, from a low-income country to a middle-income country over the next 30 years. And as a way of doing that, we have developed what we now call our Agenda for Prosperity, which is a five-year development strategy to be a cascading plan that will lead into an eventual long-term 30-year perspective plan. And within the framework of that plan, we are setting up, because of the current projected returns from our economic activities, we are setting up a transformation and development fund. This fund will be one that will ensure that the returns from our natural resources are not overspent, but that we are able to reserve some for posterity, to be able to invest them, to be able to cater for the needs of the people going forward. And we have structured the Agenda for Prosperity in such a way that it deals with eight key pillars that will address all the areas that will indeed stimulate economic growth. For example, Pillar 1 is about economic diversification that will ensure that we have inclusive growth. What this will focus on will basically be around agriculture, around fisheries, around local international tourism, etc. We have a second pillar on managing our natural resources, which we are highly endowed with. And here we talk about our mineral resources, we talk about our environment, we talk about our forestry resources, we talk about our land management, we talk about our oil and gas. And then we have a third one on accelerating human development. Here we look at the social factors, basically issues around education, issues around health, issues around dealing with water and hygiene issues, issues about environmental sanitation, and all the issues around population management. The fourth one is on international competitiveness. Here we are saying, how do we make sure that we as a country are able to compete internationally? Even when we sign all of these international treaties, bilateral and multilateral, it would mean nothing to our country if we as a country are not also positioned to be able to export something. So how do we then develop our manufacturing sector? How do we develop our industrial sector? How do we ensure that we have appreciable quality that will enable our people to then export and compete internationally? So we treat it as a whole pillar that we begin towards ensuring that we have electricity in place, fix our road network system, fix our sea and air transport system, look at our ICT, and all related issues, all geared towards ensuring that we can make our goods, our people competitive internationally. The fifth one talks about labor and employment. I'm sure you are aware that in Sierra Leone, 60% of the population are youths, and most of them are unemployed. If we have to grow our economy, we need that. We have developed a local content policy, which basically says four things. Use local resources for development. Employ Sierra Leoneans. Give preference to Sierra Leone companies in your procurement processes. And four, we are saying, allow Sierra Leoneans equity participation in key investments. But for this to be able to take place, there has to be a real strategy in place to be able to boost necessary capacities are built to be able to prepare Sierra Leoneans to fill in the positions. So we think that is through such a targeted approach, we're able to create the jobs for our people and also prepare our people to be able to occupy the jobs. The sixth one talks about social protection. We do realize that at the end of the day, if we are talking about our agenda for prosperity, it will only make sense if we are able to get our people to benefit from all of this. We therefore should come in with some targeted interventions, the girl child, the disabled, the aged, etc., etc. If you look in our budget currently, over 40% of the interventions are scattered all over with different social protection measures. Now we have to have a structured and a coherent approach to dealing with these issues so that we can have a sustained way of getting our people out of poverty. The seventh one is about governance and public reforms. We do know that internationally, if you look at the various economic indicators internationally, the various governance ratings that are done internationally, the types of reforms that you do as a country and how people view your fight against corruption, your governance processes, how effective are they, how efficient are they, how open are our democratic credentials, all of this is very critical in assessing us as a country. So we are taking deliberate efforts to make sure that is strengthened. And lastly, we do know that in all of these things we do, we have to ensure that there is gender equity, but more importantly, that we empower our women to take full advantage of policy. So you have these eight pillars as the building blocks for our engagement going into the next 25, 30 years. And we believe that with the prospects that we have as a country from our resources, and if we implement this program in its entirety, we should be able to put ourselves in the right position to be a middle-income country in the next 25 to 30 years.
Dr. Conte, you enumerated earlier on about the unemployment rate among the youth in the country. How is the government addressing this concern right now and to economically empower them?
From the institutional point of view, we have set up the National Youth Commission, charged with the responsibility of basically ensuring that jobs are created for youths and the interests and concerns of youths are addressed. We have also set up a separate ministry for youth affairs, which has as one of its core functions ensuring that concerns of youths are met and jobs are created for youths. That is at the level of the institutional structures. At the operational level, we have decided to look at, for example, we call it training for jobs. How do we ensure that these youths are also well qualified to be able to be employed? Sometimes just because you're a youth, without the requisite employment, will not help you to go anywhere. So we want to ensure that it also gets you. So we now have plans to what we call a youth village. What will happen in this youth village is that we will equip it with all types of possibilities for training, so that you can go there, get trained, and when you come out, you get jobs immediately in the in either the mines or on the oil rigs. And that is something we are pursuing. We do believe that with the way we are attracting investors and the industries that are going to come out of it, the jobs will be created, but also have to ensure that we make our youths qualified and competent to be able to take advantage of these opportunities that arise. So now we are at the stage of building capacities, building institutions to provide the requisite training and also ensure that that goes on. It will require collaboration across institutions. For example, it will require the Ministry of Education working with the Ministry of Labor and the Ministry of Youth Affairs and the University through the Tertiary Education Commission to ensure that the necessary amendments to our curricula are put in place to ensure that we tailor our training, we tailor our education to meet the demands going forward. Because we have now come to the realization that the old systems that we all went through are not maybe appropriate for our current realities. So we have to make sure that our people are trained in a way that will respond to the emerging realities in the various sectors in this country.
You mentioned about the youth job village. When will it be completed?
Well, we hope that once it is started, it will take a few years to get completed, but we will phase it out so that we will start benefiting from it. In addition to those youth villages, we are also set up what we call growth centers all over the country. We are partnering with some of the UN agencies like UNIDO, and we are building them all over the country to provide middle-level training for our people, especially for those youths that may not have gone through the university system but want to still make them useful for work in the various industries and various mining outfits around the country.
With all these lofty programs and policies, institutional-wise, that the government is trying to put in place, the issue of security always comes up. Some people have expressed concern that the current security situation, although has improved, is not conducive enough, and that proves challenging to both local and international investors. How is the government addressing the issue of security in the country?
Security is paramount. Because at the end of the day, insecurity has the potential of undermining or derailing all the gains that we have so far. I'm sure you are aware that over the last 5 to 10 years, the government has gone through a whole reform of the security sector. And that has made, for example, the army now increasingly subjecting themselves to the civilian administrations. We have seen a restructuring of the entire security sector in this country and setting up of the Office of National Security. We have also the intelligence unit, special intelligence unit set up to ensure that we also are able to get intelligence information useful for us to be able to take proactive decisions, actions where necessary. And we are building the capacity of the police, we are building the capacity of the military, we are building the capacity of the order security apparatuses across the country. We are also ensuring that we secure our land borders. But that said, what often happens is that the more you put in place these measures, the more the inadequacies are exposed. What is important is that we are putting in place measures to ensure that where these inadequacies surface, we are able to address them immediately and set examples to ensure that anybody that is thinking along those lines will do it again. We are concerned about what all of this would mean for our investors, but want to assure all our investors that Sierra Leone is one of the safest countries in the world and will remain so for a very long time.
Dr. Conte, last but not the least, what would be your message to Sierra Leoneans in Sierra Leone and abroad about what government is doing to economically empower or transform the country?
My message to Sierra Leoneans all over is to say, this is a time for us to show that we are nationalistic. This is a time for us, those of us in the diaspora, to come back and help rebuild Sierra Leone. The economic opportunities are many. We should not leave all of these opportunities in the hands of non-Sierra Leoneans. We have to come back and take responsibility for our own destiny. Sierra Leone is at the verge of takeoff, but it is only Sierra Leoneans that can make that takeoff smooth. And we hope that we can all come and work together, regardless of political affiliations, regardless of tribal affiliations. Let us come and work together, Sierra Leoneans, to take us to the next level. And I believe that together we can make that leap to the middle income country within 25 to 30 years.